Sunday marks 15 years since 9/11, a day that changed Brian Clark's life forever. He was an executive vice president at Euro Brokers, working on the 84th floor of Two World Trade Center. He was one of the few people who managed to escape from one of the floors above where the plane hit the building. Along the way, he helped another man, Stanley Pramnath, get out of the building. And Brian Clark joins us now. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
And I'm sure you've been asked this 1,000 times, but tell us what happened to you on that day.
I arrived at my office about 7:15, which is normal time on a beautiful blue sky day. And I was sitting at my desk, and at 8:46, there was a loud boom, boom. And my head jerked up as the light sort of flashed. And my peripheral vision caught something behind me, and 84 floors in the air was flames right against the glass. It dissipated after about 3 seconds, and out in the airspace was singed newspapers and computer sheets and so on, just sort of floating in the air. Very strange. I thought something had happened a couple of floors above me, maybe a welder had, on a construction site had hit a gas line, something like that. I had also been in the Trade Center in 1993 and had volunteered to be one of our floor's fire safety marshals. And they had provided a flashlight and a whistle and given us some training in the intervening years. They'd done actually a very good job of that, in my opinion. So I grabbed the flashlight, put the whistle around my neck, went out of my office and started moving the people in my quadrant, as I was instructed, to the center core. To await further instructions. So people started to move. The brokers on the east side of our tower rushed to the north windows and looked up 9 floors to the 93rd floor of the north tower and saw a ring of fire around that floor. So we knew very quickly that something had happened next door, that it wasn't our building, in fact. I walked to those windows and had heard that people had started to jump. I didn't want to see that, so I stayed back from the windows. Went back to my office, called my wife in Mahwah. I called my dad in Toronto, told him, turn on the TV. Something's happened next door, but we are okay. I put down the phone, and the strobe lights flashed. The speaker gave a little whoop whoop, and a voice came upon the PA system and said, your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen. Building 2, the South Tower, is secure. If you're in the midst of evacuation, you may use the re-entry doors and the elevators to return to your floor. Repeat, building 2 is secure. And he went through the instruction again.
And this is just minutes before, by the way, the other plane hit your tower, correct?
That is correct. I came out of my office and came nose to nose with a coworker of mine, Bobby Call. And I said, Bobby, what have you heard? He said, well, I was down a few floors and I heard the announcement and I came back up. And he was in the midst of that sentence when boom, boom, this loud double explosion again. And it was really, I didn't know it at the time, but it was our building being hit and then the plane exploding inside. It came in at about the 78th, 79th floor, 6 floors below us. And in that split second of the double explosion, our floor just fell apart. Everything came out of the ceiling, air conditioning ducts and speakers and the works, if you like, fell down. No electricity. The air was filled with white, chalky construction dust. There was no flames, no smoke at that point. And the building swayed. For 10 seconds, I was terrified. And that, fortunately for me, in hindsight, that was the only moment of the day that I was afraid. For 5 seconds, the building swayed toward the west, toward the Hudson River. And whether this really happened or not, I can't say with certainty, but the sensation was, and this will sound like an exaggeration, but I'm telling you what I felt, the building swayed 6 to 8 feet, and then it stopped. And then for 5 seconds, it came back to vertical, and with a noticeable sort of hop or jerk as all the steel went into square, it you know, came back to vertical, and I had this feeling wash over me, Brian, you'll be okay. And for the rest of the day, I felt like I was in control of what I was doing.
So how did you get out of the building before it collapsed? Tell us about that.
I led a group of 6 or 8 people into the center core with my flashlight on. And as I was approaching the intersection, you've got to imagine these two hallways crossing, an east-west hallway, a north-south hallway, crossed in the middle of the building. As I approached the intersection, I had a choice to turn right to stairway C, go straight ahead to stairway B, or turn left to stairway A. I was intending to go to stairway C, and I felt this almost push on my left shoulder. It was a very strange feeling, but there was nobody there. But it pushed me to the left, and I started down stairway A. I just sort of went with it. And with these six or eight people following me down the stairs in the darkness with my flashlight on, we only went down three floors when a heavy-set woman coming up the stairs stopped us. And she said, no, you can't go down. There's flames and smoke below. We've got to go higher. And she just refused to let anybody past her. And I was distracted in the midst of this conversation by a stranger's voice inside the 81st floor. I grabbed the shoulder of the fellow beside me, a coworker, Ron DeFrancesco, and I said, "Ron, we got to get this guy." And I don't think Ron knew what I was talking about, but we were able to push the drywall back and sort of squeeze between the door frame, and the wall. We got Sid sideways through that, and I have this clear memory of everybody being on the floor of the landing, if you like, with me, and they all climbed higher, and sadly, they all died that day. Mm. But Ron and I went in on 81, and halfway to the stranger, Ron was overcome with the smoke, and he went back to the stairs. I continued on to this stranger, kind of dug him out of the rubble, and the two of us went back to the stairway, and I guess that was the fateful moment. I shone the light down the stairs. I only saw smoke billowing up, not any flames, and we just started down. We dug our way through a lot of rubble and got out of the building at about 4 minutes to 10.
Down 80 floors of stairs at that point.
Correct.
Wow.
We ran south from the Trade Center, got to Trinity Church when my new best friend Stanley from Fuji Bank turned around and said, "I think that building's going to come down." I said, "I don't think so. That's a steel structure. That's carpets and furniture and drapery burning." And I didn't really finish that sentence when boom, 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 from the top, this whole building dissolved in 8 to 10 seconds. Mm. And we watched the South Tower collapse. Trinity Church acted as protection at that time because the white wave of guck slammed into Trinity Church like a wave hitting a seawall, and it exploded upward, and Stanley and I are standing in this big bubble of fresh air. We ran up to Broadway, and when the wave caught up to us, we dove into 42 Broadway, a building I'd never been in before, and we talked for 45 minutes. During that time, the North Tower collapsed. We didn't know that. We went out the back side of 42 Broadway onto Broad Street by the New York Stock Exchange, and somehow we got separated. But I wandered over to the East River. As I started walking north, I heard a bullhorn, "Next ferry's for Jersey City." Well, I want to get to New Jersey. I ran down that pier, jumped on a ferry, and it went down the East River and around Battery Park and wow, northwest toward Jersey City.
So, first of all, do you still keep in touch with Stanley?
Stanley and I are good friends. I went to his oldest daughter's wedding about a month ago. He, several years ago, came to one of my daughter's weddings. One of us calls the other one every couple of months, and we're blood brothers at this point.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing relationship.
And 15 years later, how important is that experience in your life?
Well, I do have lots of friends. I have a pretty wide social circle, and Stanley's part of that. But I guess as I reflect back on the events of that day, what I've realized over time is that there's no point in dwelling on unanswerable questions. You know, what if I'd turned to the right to stairway C instead of going left, going with the push to stairway A? So I have learned, and I tell other people, that there is no point in wasting time trying to answer unanswerable questions. And I have just been gifted with the fact that I don't have survivor guilt. I fall asleep immediately. I haven't had any nightmares about that event, and I take no credit for that. It's just the way it's unfolded for me. Likewise, one cannot predict the future with any certainty. I went to work that day, a normal day, had no idea what was about to happen. Hmm. And so if you don't dwell on unanswerable questions in the past, you don't worry about the future, it pretty well leaves you with the present. And that's where I try to live every day. Every day is a great day. Some are just greater than others. Life is precious. You know, use every day to your best.
What are you going to do on September 11th this year?
I will be thinking of the people that I worked with, and we lost. We lost 61 people of our 250 employees that day. Our church has a special service that evening at about 5 p.m., and at 7 p.m., I'm going to be in another municipality, a local town, Allendale, where they've asked me to be the guest speaker at their event. It's an annual municipal event. You know, there's a lot of kids that are, well, as old as 20, I suppose, who really have no memory of that day, that apparently will be at the event. I'm speaking at a high school, not that day, but a few days later, and the beat goes on.
Well, Brian Clark, it is probably very nice for people to hear how joyful and uplifting you are after what happened 15 years ago to you. So thank you so much for joining us.
I enjoyed it myself. Thank you very much.